Welcome to Friend of Maryland. My name is Kat Pause, and this is a fat-friendly space. Today on Friend of Maryland, I share some exciting fat news. I chat with performance artist Kimberly Dark, and I spotlight a blog from the Fat Nutritionist about feeling fat. Time for some rad fatty news from around the globe. First up, if you're in Brisbane or within driving distance of Brisbane, Australia, make sure to check out the Brisbane Fab Fatty Clothing Swatch coming up on March 10th. If you want more information about that, the best place to go is the Facebook page or blog of the Fat Heffalump. Another piece of rad fatty news is that Disney has closed or is temporarily working on its Habit Heroes website and attraction due to the pressure that they've received from all sorts of groups that bullying fat kids is never a good idea and it's never okay. Last but certainly not least, for those of you here in New Zealand, if you check out the latest copy of Woman's Day on page 45, you might actually see a familiar face. Yes, I agreed to do a women's magazine. It was something that I thought a great deal about before I went ahead and did it. I'm not usually a purchaser of women's magazines, and quite often my experience with women's magazines is in the supermarket, the grocery line, looking at the articles being promoted, which are lose 5 kilos in 5 days. But the editor who was interested in doing the story seemed really genuine, and I did appreciate that it's a much different audience than who normally receives our kinds of messages, and that it would be a very large audience as well. So the title of the piece is Big and Proud, You Can Call Me Fat, and it's got some nice pictures accompanying. Just to kind of set it off, it goes, down with fat phobia, says this large and fabulous academic. When meeting 135 kg Kat Pause, don't be afraid to state the obvious. Yes, she's fat, and she has no problem shouting it from the rooftops. I had to come out as a fat person, says the Palmerston North woman, 32. It was about embracing that word and having a sense of pride. There's nothing wrong with me. I can be fat and fabulous at the same time. If you want to read more, you'll have to go out on the stands and purchase it. So that's our rad fatty news for the week. Today is Kimberly Dark, a sociologist and storyteller who explores the contours of privilege and oppression in everyday life. Kimberly, thank you so much for joining me today.
It's my pleasure.
So you are, among many things, a performance artist, and you do a lot of work specifically about fat embodiment. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, sure. You know, I'm a sociologist by training, but I started doing performance work in part because, you know, people don't talk about things that make them uncomfortable, but I can use humor and intimacy and embodiment to help open conversations about, you know, the way privilege works in everyday life, the way appearance is either accorded privilege or privileges withheld based on beauty standards, on the way people look. And that can range from, you know, things like fat to standards of beauty to race to gender, you know, a whole spectrum of things. But, wow, these are the things that people don't think they want to talk about. And, you know, so that's part of why performance really seems to work. And, I've been at this for about 13 years now, and it seems to really be a way to, you know, to bring dialogue and to bring thought-provoking entertainment to people on these themes.
So when you do a piece on, like, fat embodiment, for example, because that's an area that I'm particularly interested in, and I know many of my listeners are as well, what does that look like? What does that mean?
Yeah, what does that mean? First of all, I think about storytelling as having a couple of different components. Well, one of them is the story that I'm telling, but the other one is simply my presence on stage. And as a large woman, I am multiple things at once, right? I'm also a middle-aged woman. I'm also someone's mother. I'm also someone who, you know, dresses and acts a little sexy, right? There's a whole range of ways that I present an embodiment. I'm presenting female gender as well. You know, there's all of these ways. And for me, that's part of the story, too. I learned when I very first started doing this, I used to think that it was about the story. But I very quickly learned that, no, actually, a huge significant piece of what I'm doing is that people are watching a fat woman on stage embodying all of those multiple things. And we don't often see that. You know, it doesn't happen on television very often that that there is a fat woman who is a complex human being. It doesn't happen very often, you know, in movies. I mean, you know, really when you look at the portrayals of fat women, they're very narrow, and often that person is the butt of someone's joke rather than the subject of the story, the person who, you know, is intelligent and vibrant and interesting. So I started, you know, really looking at how can I actually talk about this as well as be this, and that sometimes is subtle for me and sometimes it's overt. I've got two shows out right now that one of them is called Complicated Courtesies, and you know, if someone were interested, you could take a look on KimberlyDark.com and see a description of that show and where it's going to be next. But that one really is about how we manage complex identities in our everyday lives and still remain courteous and also prompt people to treat us with dignity and respect. And so there are moments in there where I talk about, you know, when somebody gives you that look, you know, it might be if I'm out at the beach somewhere, for example. It might be that somebody just gives me that look that says, yeah, fat people have no rights to be out in public enjoying the sun on our skin or the wind in our hair, no rights. Somehow we should be put away or covered up. And then, you know, from that part of the story, I go into, you know, what are the various responses to that look, and how would I handle that with courtesy and dignity? Because, you know, in that moment, of course, I'm interacting with someone who is wounded and doesn't perhaps understand that. So, you know, this is a little bit of how this goes. I mean, that's the part of the story that is overt. But then there's also the fact that because I am standing there telling that story, the audience has a chance to basically stare at me for, you know, the hour and a half that I'm on stage. And they can do that openly and experience me as a complex human being. And I think that part is nonverbal, but really has a whole lot of meaning and impact as well.
What kind of response and reactions do you get from your typical audience?
Well, you know, it depends on the audience, of course. I do performances at colleges and universities, also at theaters and festivals. Oftentimes at theaters and festivals, those are people that have, you know, they've purchased a ticket to come see a show, and they're, you know, they're there for entertainment. And that's great, and they, you know, and they get what they've paid for, and they receive that entertainment and some humor and some, you know, some moments of self-reflection and all of that. You know, the reviews are good, right? So I've been at this a while, and I've been lucky enough to enjoy some good reviews and audience response. At colleges and universities, this is an interesting experience because a lot of times I am billed as, you know, in North America at least, in the U.S. In particular, sometimes a performer on a college campus, like I'm there is the diversity programming or the women's issues programming, you know? And sometimes those are audiences where a professor has prompted students to come. You know, they didn't buy a ticket because they were personally interested. And that is fascinating because those are often audiences where people are overwhelmed, first of all, by how much they enjoyed the show, but also by how many personal things they felt. You know, like they find themselves in the stories that I tell, and that actually is a big part of my goal. You know, you might find yourself in the stories I'm telling about me, or in some of the other characters in the story, and that can be, you know, really good conversation fodder for folks, especially when they weren't looking for it. You know.
So, what relationship does your performance art work have in to the like academic side of you as a sociologist?
Yeah, right. So, you know, I at this point, I mean, you know, life takes different turns, doesn't it? At this point, my academic home is at Cal State San Marcos in Southern California. I'm pretty much only involved there teaching in a graduate program in sociological practice, just a few classes a year. The primary work that I do these days is, you know, is touring. And I, you know, I do have a background in a publication history as a qualitative researcher, but you know, the majority now has been focused on how do we work with audiences. I consider myself a practitioner, a pop sociologist, if you will, at this time. So it's become a little bit different for me how the sociology in my work plays out.
What's your ideal audience? Like, who do you enjoy performing for the most?
Oh, that's funny. That's a funny thing to try and answer. It's a different kind of enjoyment, I have to say. Theaters and festivals, you know, festival audiences are very fun. You know, everybody's there to have a good time. And, you know, theaters, I mean, those are audience members, as I mentioned, who, you know, genuinely want to be there. But I have to say, too, the audiences where, so maybe the answer is those are the most fun, but the university audiences are the most gratifying. Those are the ones where oftentimes the audience has a magnificent time, and they're so surprised by it that there's, you know, an enthusiasm that is, you know, just lovely to feel. Sometimes those are difficult shows, you know, people can pull up some emotion and need to talk about things, and wow, that's really great too. Because for me, you know, I think a lot of entertainment actually dumbs people down, especially what we see in popular media, and I don't think that has to be that way. I think that you know, you can be well entertained and have a good, pleasurable time watching a show, and still have a whole lot of emotion and thought provoked from that.
Well, Kimberly, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
It's my pleasure. I hope to get to New Zealand soon. I
know.
I'm back from a month-long tour in Australia.
I was about to say, you'll have to let me know when your tour brings you to New Zealand.
Yeah.
Because I would obviously love to get to meet you in person, but also love to see your show. And the work that you're doing is so important. So, yeah.
Well, thanks.
In the spotlight today is a blog piece from The Fat Nutritionist. The piece is entitled Feeling Fat and was written by Michelle, published on February 20th, 2012. Quote, when my job and my whole living situation changed a little while back, I was thrown into body image crises I hadn't experienced since my early 20s, hating the way I look, feeling bad about my eating, zero interest in moving my body, weight gain. It is tempting, always so tempting, to rely on the panacea of dieting, or whatever term you like to give to intentional weight loss attempts, to fix these problems. Because at least in the short term, it can. And when you're feeling horrible right now, naturally, a quick fix is incredibly attractive. Here's how I deal with that urge. I allow myself to have these feelings. I am not a body image superhero, despite being a health at every size and fat acceptance activist. I go through many more good times than bad, thanks to health at every size and fat activism, but I still live in this culture And I get all the same messages everyone else does about how I'm yucky and gross and no one will ever want to have sex with me, ever. My body image is, and likely always will be, a work in progress. As part of that process, I rely on a body image crisis algorithm, a sort of Socratic series of questions I ask myself to get to the root of and solutions to the crisis. So let's begin. So what's going on under the hood beneath disliking my weight or feeling fat? What does that really mean? It means feeling shitty about myself, feeling undesirable, not liking the way I look, feeling socially anxious, feeling like I'm not welcome and do not belong in this world. Sometimes it's feeling physically unfit and like my eating is very disorganized and chaotic. Has losing weight in the past helped any of these things? No, actually. I did like certain things about how I looked when I was losing weight, but it also made me feel weirdly disconnected from my body, and I kept holding myself to higher and higher standards of how I should look. It's also never helped to make my eating or exercise more healthy and enjoyable for the long term, and actually caused some disordered stuff there. Even if it did or could help these feelings, is losing weight likely to be a permanent fix? No. We all know that. The failure rate is somewhere between 80 to 98% after 5 years. And given my body's apparent propensity to weight gain, and given how triggering I find the barest hint of possible food restriction, I seriously doubt I would be one of the lucky ones. Are there more direct ways of dealing with these problems? Well, yes, there are body image exercises I can do. There are social anxiety exercises I can do. There are practical, immediate things I can do to help my eating, like eating my meals in snacks on time, offering myself a variety of foods at each meal and snack, and giving myself permission to eat what I want and not to eat what I don't want. And I've actually been doing that, and I have been feeling a lot better about eating. Editor's note, eating is complicated for me because, ironically, as part of my job, I eat strange foods at strange times of the day with my clients, which makes structure, the part of eating competence that I especially rely on to feel sane around food, uniquely difficult. If I'm concerned about weight gain, I can go get a physical. I already know what the factors are that likely have influenced my weight, such as new medications, major life changes like moving and changing jobs, episodes of depression. I already know that my blood pressure and blood sugar are good. So what about not feeling welcome in the world? This one is trickier. It goes to a somewhat philosophical place. Well, first of all, when you see someone as fat or fatter than yourself, do you feel like they shouldn't exist? Well, no, of course not, but then I'm not a total asshole. Do you believe most people are total assholes? It's tempting sometimes, but actually, no. However, I do know that appearance-based prejudices are all kinds of widespread. Now, that's true. Maybe prejudiced people don't welcome you in the world. Does that mean, objectively, that you don't belong here? No, I think I belong here. I think I have the right to exist as I am and to go about my daily life. Do you require a welcome from all people in the world in order to live your life? Well, it'd be nice, but no, I don't actually require that to live my life. And is your body objectively wrong in any sense? No, there is no objective wrong when it comes to bodies. It's mostly a cultural judgment. Is there a purpose fulfilled even by bodies that are considered outside the norm or culturally wrong? Yes, wrong bodies add diversity to the population and even to the sum of human knowledge. They house people who are awesome and valuable in their own right. Even wrong bodies allow people to exist in the world and live their lives. So, could it possibly be argued that the mere fact of a body's existence may render it objectively right? I guess you could argue that. The cultural tradition is to say that man is made in God's image. Do you think there's some truth in that, even in a secular perspective? Yes, because I believe in the intrinsic value of all life, even yours, even mine. Unquote. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Friend of Marilyn. Friend of Marilyn airs weekly on Access Manitou 999 AM and is podcast on iTunes. You can also find Friend of Marilyn at friendofmarilyn.com and on Facebook at her Facebook page. If you want to contact the show, give us feedback, volunteer to come on as a guest, you can email Friend of Marilyn, friendofmarilyn@aol.com. Closing the show is Mary Chapin Carpenter with Shut Up and Kiss Me.